article is entitled Seven Questions with Frank Perea, Helping Families Find Their Forever Homes, by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Frank Perea Jr. has been in the mortgage industry for more than 18 years, where he has served as a loan processor, junior underwriter, loan originator, and mortgage broker. Perea's career took him all around the country before he decided to come back to West Texas, where he was born and raised. Now he's focusing on helping West Texans achieve homeownership through his branch at National Security Mortgage Company. The Reporter-Telegram recently sat down with Perea to ask him seven questions to learn more about the small business owner. Where are you from? I was born in Fort Stockton and then ended up moving to Pecos, where I graduated from high school. I'm a second-generation Mexican-American, so my parents were born here. I know that our roots go back to Mexico because I did a DNA test that traced us back to Chihuahua, so that was pretty cool to learn about. How did you get into the mortgage industry? I left West Texas at the age of 18 and went to the big city of Dallas. I went to college thinking that I wanted to be in school to learn about computers. My dad told me about an opportunity to be an officer. At the age of 21, I started working full-time as a loan officer for a company in Dallas. What did you like about being a loan officer? I just like numbers. I like the paperwork. While I was working at that call center, I learned a lot about mortgage terminology. I learned how to be a mentor because a guy named Jose just took me in under his wing. I like helping customers refinance their mortgages and save money. I just like the business and being able to help individuals and families accomplish the dream of home ownership is a blessing. How do you describe your job as a mortgage lender? When a family or a person comes to the point in their life where they're tired of renting or they want to invest in purchasing a home, they might need a mortgage lender. Most people can't buy a home in cash, so they look for a lender to get them pre-approved for a loan so that they can buy a home. That's what we do. We take your application, run your credit financials, and qualify you. Then we go over all the different loan options with the interest rates, payments, and closing so that you can get out on the market. If you want to make an offer on a house, you can show the seller that you've been pre-approved for a loan so that you can make a contract with the seller and get to the closing tables. What challenges do you face as a lender? The market itself can be a challenge. Interest rates go up and down all the time, and it might be hard for people to qualify. A lot of people don't even want to get into the house market because the rates are too high. What's helped us as a business to keep going is just all our past client referrals. People that we've helped in the past keep referring people to our business. I've been doing it for so long now, the kids of some people I've helped are calling me for loans. What inspired you to open your own branch of National Security Mortgage Company? Being an entrepreneur kind of runs in my blood. My dad and grandpa were entrepreneurs. My dad always instilled in me stuff that entrepreneurs face. He always talked to me about money management and credit management. I remember all the little talks that he had with me that helped me be aware and conscious of how important credit, money management, and investment is. One thing I'm proud of that my wife and Cynthia accomplished is buying our own building. We rented an office location for 10 years, and now we have our own unit. We purchased it and rebuilt it for our needs for a mortgage office. What made you want to come back to West Texas? I've lived in Dallas, Pittsburgh, and Denver. My decision to come back was more personal than anything. Our daughter was born in Denver, and it's beautiful and everything. But we wanted to come back to be close to family. We wanted to raise our children close to their tíos, tías, primos, and abuelos. The main reason we came back was to be close to family. West Texas has been good to us, and we are just blessed. This article is entitled, West Texas Food Bank Aids Asheville After Hurricane, by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Asheville, North Carolina, is about 1,300 miles from West Texas. But West Texans are being called to help North Carolinians affected by the aftermath of Hurricane Helene. The West Texas Food Bank is collecting donations for the MANA nonprofit food bank in Asheville over the next couple of weeks, with a goal of sending at least one 18-wheeler to Asheville. MANA lost everything. Food, trucks, the roads are washed out. It's a challenging area to get resources to. And now, even more so, said Libby Stevens, chief executive officer of the food bank. A satellite location has been procured. Speaking with the reporter Telegram, she said she has known MANA CEO Claire Neal for a while through their work with the Feeding America Network, which is comprised of 200 food banks. We all support each other. We have something in common. We want to feed our neighbors, Stevens said. Collection barrels are currently set up at both the food bank's campuses in Midland at 1601 West Cliff Drive and Odessa at 411 South Pagewood Avenue, as well as Odessa City Hall and the First Alert 7, formerly CBS 7 Studios, in Music City Mall. Stevens said the food bank will be glad to bring collection barrels to any other business willing to host them and collect the donations. Basic canned goods, from Spam to Beanie Weenies to beef jerky, Pop-Tarts, cereal, oatmeal, Gatorade, Powerade, to other items like baby wipes, hand sanitizer, gloves, paper towel, and duct tape are welcome, she said. Think of it as, if you were going camping, what would you need, she said, noting that Asheville residents may not have access to electricity and, even if they have generators, may have difficulty accessing fuel to power the generators. Those who would like to donate money can do so on the food bank's website, earmarking the funds for MANA, or do the same on Feeding America's website, or on the memo line of a check. John Bushman's company, ICA, has already donated $50,000 to the effort. Stevens said the donation drive will last a couple of weeks to allow MANA to finish getting set up to receive and distribute donations. We as a network are used to dealing with disasters. On the Texas coast, we're used to dealing with hurricanes. For places like Asheville, this is their first time dealing with something like this, said Stevens. With Hurricane Milton bearing down on Florida, Stevens agreed West Texans may be called up again. She said Tampa Bay's food bank has already moved 25 trucks outside of the expected storm surge area and prepared trucks to remove debris and sump pumps to keep water out of the facilities, so that as soon as debris is cleared, food bank officials can get to work distributing food and supplies. West Texas is such a giving community. We ride into the storm, said Stevens. This article is entitled Nest Quest. Residents worry about fate of Texas burrowing owls amid construction. By Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Texas burrowing owls have found a home in the burrows of a prairie dog town in an empty lot near Front Street and North Adams Street, but will soon need to find a new one. According to Donna Bell and Mike Hutt, there is about 8 to 10 burrowing owls that have made the abandoned prairie dog town their home. After continuously seeing a food truck park in the same lot that the owls are living in, the couple worked to raise awareness about the birds, reaching out to officials to ensure the safety of the owls. Now, the couple's concern is reaching a new level. Construction for a new Dollar Tree will soon begin in the Owl's lot, and the duo is worried about the fate of these feathery neighbors. Texas Burrowing Owl. Michael Nickel, museum scientist at the Sibley Nature Center, said that Texas burrowing owls are unique in that they reside underground. They might not always dig their own burrow, so they like to reside in abandoned prairie dog colonies. Corey Borgman, migratory bird biologist and non-game land bird specialist at U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, said that because burrowing owls like living in abandoned quarters of prairie dog colonies, the two animals are often associated together. Nickel added that the burrowing owl is a migratory bird, so they are considered a protected species under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. A protected species doesn't necessarily mean they're endangered, threatened, or vulnerable, Nickel told the Reporter Telegram, but because the burrowing owl is a migratory species, it does fall under the protection of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. Migratory Bird Treaty Act. The Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1918 was established to ensure the sustainability of populations of all protected migratory bird species, according to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The treaty protects over 1,000 species in North America. The MBTA protects birds themselves, as well as their eggs, their nests, and any body parts such as feathers and things like that, Borgman said. It's prohibited to kill a burrowing owl directly or remove its nest. If a burrowing owl built a nest and laid eggs in it, the nest would have to remain undisturbed until the birds have fledged. Borgman said that although the Migratory Bird Treaty Act protects birds, eggs, and their nests, it doesn't protect habitats. If the food truck is parked directly on top of the burrow, it could be problematic, Borgman said. I think that it could easily be a conversation explaining to the owners that they don't have to park directly on top because they are protected. She added that it's a situation that could be resolved. Texas Parks and Wildlife has management guidelines that says to conduct activities at a minimum of 100 feet from the nesting sites, Borgman said. She said that although parking directly on top would lead to people disturbing the ground each time someone walks up to the food truck, if there was a minimum buffer between the truck and the nest, they could coexist in the same lot. With a safe distance, the owls wouldn't be hurt by the foot traffic that the food truck creates. Game warden Philip Bird added that a food truck creates very low disturbances to the burrowing owls. What's next for the owls? The Migratory Bird Treaty Act doesn't protect habitats. It only protects the birds, their nests, and their eggs. Donna Bell and Mike Hutt suspected that the owls were protecting a nest and newly laid eggs. But if there aren't any eggs and nests right now, there isn't much that can be done for the owls. It's not nesting season for any bird in Texas at the moment, Bird said. Burrowing owls are federally protected, so there may be some type of permit that the construction company needs to get. But that's not something that the state regulates. Since it is not nesting season, the burrowing owls would just have to find a new habitat. Because natural habitat loss happens due to development, Texas Parks and Wildlife has constructed a guide about how to build artificial den sites in urban areas. Bird said, burrowing owls nest anywhere that there's prairie dog town, and that is plenty all over West Texas. The burrowing owls will be able to adapt and find a new home. I assume that when construction begins in earnest, the owls would fly off and find a better habitat for themselves, he said. It's not nesting season, so there's not really a state violation occurring. This article is entitled Midland Woman 66 Killed in Pedestrian Crash on East County Road 135 by B. K. Richter, staff writer. A collision has claimed the life of a Midland woman on East County Road 135. According to a report by the Texas Department of Public Safety, 66-year-old Bonnie Lou Livingston of Midland was pronounced dead at the scene following a crash that occurred at 7:49 p.m. Monday along East County Road 135. The driver of the vehicle, identified in the report as 64-year-old Nixo Antonio Prieto of Midland, was driving a 2009 Chevrolet Silverado. The preliminary information from the report revealed that the Chevrolet was traveling eastbound on County Road 135 when it struck Livingston, who was crossing the roadway as a pedestrian. This crash remains under investigation, and no further information was available Tuesday afternoon. Within Texas, the month of October was recorded as the deadliest for pedestrians in 2023. With the Texas Department of Transportation reporting 80 pedestrian fatalities in traffic crashes. This article is entitled For Love and Inspiration, The Cedric Benson Statue Saga So Far by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. John White's dream to have a Cedric Benson statue in Midland is now closer to reality. On Tuesday, City Council approved accepting a future donation of a life-size homage, cast in bronze, of the late Lee Rebels great. The process has been a labor of love and inspiration. White, a former Midland resident who now lives in Nacogdoches, first proposed the donation of a Benson statue to the city in November 2022. But council members put the item on hold. Work on the idea started long before. In speaking with the Reporter Telegram this week, White said he was moved by the Beatitude statues he saw on a trip in Israel and was impressed by how lifelike they were. It's in his nature to facilitate inspiration in others, he said, and he considers Benson inspirational. I've always thought that he was the pinnacle player coming out of Midland, White said, and with good reason. Benson is considered one of the greatest football players in Texas history. He led the Rebels to 3 consecutive state championships from 1998 to 2000. The team notched a 43-3 record at that time, including a 25-game winning streak and a 15-0 finish in 1999. Benson recorded 8,418 career rushing yards, the third most in state history at the time of his graduation. The running back also notched 127 touchdowns, one short of the state record. He is the only high school player to ever grace the cover of Dave Campbell's Texas Football Preview magazine. He would go on to play at the University of Texas at Austin and in the NFL. I'd hate to be a defensive back and try to tackle that guy, White said, a former Rebel football player himself on teams 11 and 12. Benson died August 17, 2019, at 36 years old from injuries suffered in a motorcycle crash in Austin. White said he wants a statue to be erected at Astound Broadband Stadium. I want kids to wonder who that was, and for them to learn that no matter where they go, they need to aspire to be the best at whatever they do. Before doing any formal proposal planning, White approached Benson's mother, Jacqueline, for her permission. He said she's on board. The sculptor will be J. Payne Lara of Navasota, and the next step is getting more images together to make a 3D model. The project will be funded entirely from private concerns, White said. It will cost between $40,000 and $50,000 for a full-size statue. Benson hasn't been White's only effort for greatness to be recognized. He also has made submissions to the Lee Legacy Wall of Fame at Legacy High School. "I like to put people in the spotlight to be recognized," he said. "It's kind of a hobby, and I really like it." This article is entitled, "Basin Nonprofits Invited to Join Citibank's $60,000 Giveaway." The Citibank Community Rewards Program was launched in the Permian Basin in 2020. By B. K. Richter, staff writer. Registration is now open for nonprofits of the Permian Basin to register to participate in the Citibank Community Rewards $60,000 nonprofit giveaway. According to a recent press statement, the Grant Rewards Program gives local nonprofits until October 31st to register. Nonprofit organizations interested in participating can register at city.bank/community rewards. Additionally, submissions received before 9 p.m. October 23rd will be eligible for an early rewards drawing for one of six $500 prizes. Registration for the grant giveaway will be closed at 5 p.m. October 31st. All nonprofits can register in one of six possible categories: basic human needs, health and wellness, youth development and advocacy, education and youth services, community contribution and leadership, and animal welfare and environment. Residents of the Permian Basin will help determine the 30 recipients of the 2024 Community Rewards by voting for their favorite charities. Nonprofits can expect rewards allotted to the top five recipients in each category. First place receives $4,000, second place is $2,000, third place garners $1,500, fourth place lands $1,000, and fifth place gets $500. The top overall vote will receive an additional $3,000. Voting begins November 4th and will continue through December 6th. Rules for the community grant giveaways do state one vote per email address per hour. All voters must be 18 years old or above. Winners will be announced during the second week of December. The Citibank Community Rewards Program was launched in the Permian Basin in 2020 and has awarded $240,000 to more than 60 charitable organizations. This is the Life Tributes column. Lawrence Larry Charles Clements, July 31, 1979 to October 2, 2024. Lawrence Charles Clements, 45, of Midland, passed away on Wednesday, October 2nd in Houston, following a brief illness. Services will be held privately at a later time. Larry was born on July 31, 1979, in Abilene, to Marshall and Lauren Abelson Clements. He married Gwendolyn Wendy Davis on October 13, 2019, in Big Spring. Survivors include his wife, Wendy Clements of Midland, one daughter and son-in-law, Haley and Bobby Lloyd of LaPel, Indiana, two grandchildren, Jayla and Blaze Lloyd, one sister and brother-in-law, Becky and T.J. Young of Virginia Beach, Virginia, one nephew, Liam Young, and his mother, Lauren Abelson Clements of Midland. Larry is preceded in death by his father, Marshall Dave Clements, and one grandson, Jackson Michael Dean Lloyd. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Midland Memorial Foundation or the Midland College Foundation. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. David Lee Widner, December 15, 1932 to September 29, 2024. David Lee Widner, age 91, of Horseshoe Bay, peacefully passed away on Sunday, September 29th. Dave was born on December 15, 1932, to Welby and Mary Widner in Lima, Ohio. Shortly after graduation, he married the love of his life, Haley Ann Wilson, on June 11, 1955. They were married 69 years and had three sons and one daughter. Those left to cherish his memory are his wife, Haley Widner, sister Jean Andrews, sons Steve Widner and wife Catherine, Kevin Widner and wife Pat, Mike Widner and wife Karen, daughter Vicky Cates and husband Ken, as well as eight grandchildren and seven great-grandchildren. Dave was preceded in death by his parents, Welby and Mary Widner. In lieu of flowers, contributions can be made to your favorite charity or to the High Sky Children's Ranch. David Truitt, July 23, 1952 to October 5, 2024. David Truitt finished his journey on this planet on October 5, 2024. This journey started on July 23, 1952 at Crane, Texas. He was the third child born to Norman and Dorothy Truitt. In 1973, he married his high school sweetheart, Linda Evans, and to this union, three daughters were born: Pamela, 1981, Kendra, 1984, and Diana, 1980. In lieu of flowers, David requested that donations be made in his honor to the charity of one's choice. Visitation will be from 8 to 10 a.m. on Saturday, October 12th, at Westside Church of Christ in Midland. Funeral services will begin at 10 a.m. at Westside Church of Christ immediately following the visitation, with Mike Vestal officiating. Burial will follow that afternoon in Crane at Crane Memorial Cemetery. Services are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Midland. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Jennifer Golden. Jennifer Golden, 47, of Midland, passed away October 5th. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, October 9th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Thursday, October 10th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter-Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, October 9th, 2024. Midland Health. How to make breast cancer awareness personal. Another October rolls around with pink ribbons everywhere. Turn on the TV for a football game or attend any event, and you're going to find someone who has their hair colored pink with a pink ribbon on their cheek or some indication that they are supporting breast cancer awareness. This is because breast cancer is so personal to most everyone. 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer sometime in their lifetime, and 1 in 1,000 men will be diagnosed as well. If you are not one of those diagnosed, there is a good possibility that maybe it's your mother, sister, grandmother, or aunt who is. And if this dreaded disease has not hit your family, maybe it is your next-door neighbor or best friend or teacher or a coworker. But let's take breast cancer awareness down to a more personal level. If you are a woman who has not been diagnosed with breast cancer, what do you need to know? How can you have personal breast cancer awareness? Get into the habit. Every woman, as soon as she starts her period, should start doing monthly breast self-exams. Doing this assessment monthly trains your brain to know what your normal tissue feels like. Then if there is a change, your brain will pick up this change and you will be alerted. If you are not doing monthly breast self-exams, an abnormality might have to become larger in size for you to notice the change. Know your score. Knowing your risk score is the next step to having personal breast cancer awareness. Earlier this year, when superstar Olivia Munn was diagnosed with breast cancer, It was because she had found out that she was at high risk for breast cancer and had undergone a breast MRI. Munn appeared in several publications after urging women to know their breast cancer risk score. We assess risk score on every woman that comes through our center. Should your risk score come back greater than 20%, talk to your practitioner or call our high-risk clinic at 432-221-1189. Screening recommendations are made based on your risk score. For example, women who have a risk score that is greater than 20% and they are less than 40 years of age, they would need to start a screening MRI at age 25 and screening mammogram at age 30. Women who are 40 and over would have their mammogram every year, and a supplemental MRI would be recommended if their risk score is greater than 20%. We also offer women with an intermediate risk score of 15% to 20% a supplemental MRI, which includes a discussion with their provider, because many of them have a first-degree relative that has had breast cancer but do not have other risk factors that put their risk greater than 20%. Even if your risk score comes back to be less than 20%, you still need to get your screening mammogram at age 40. Again, 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer sometime in their lifetime. Early detection is key. Imagine going to the grocery store or a busy shopping mall and counting all the women that you pass, and every 8th woman is diagnosed with breast cancer, and you will see how high the prevalence for breast cancer. As you go through this month of October, keep it constantly in your mind that there is no more important breast cancer awareness than personal breast cancer awareness. Your breast health is so important to you and your loved ones. Remember that early detection is the key to surviving breast cancer. Physical activity. Weekend warriors versus spreading out exercise. Weekend warriors, people who pack most of their physical activity into 1 or 2 days, may gain the same health protective benefits as people who exercise throughout the week, as long as they get the recommended amount, new research finds. The study found regardless of whether people concentrated their 150 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity over a short period of time or stretched it out over the week, the risk fell for more than 200 diseases over the next 6 years, with the strongest associations found among cardiometabolic conditions such as high blood pressure and diabetes. The findings were published in the American Heart Association journal Circulation and presented at the German Cardiac Society's Heart Days conference in Hamburg. Quote, "The bottom line is that it's really the total volume of physical activity rather than the pattern that matters," end quote, said Dr. Sean Kirschit, the study's co-senior author and a cardiac electrophysiologist at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. Quote, "The important thing is that you get your recommended levels of physical activity. If 1 to 2 days a week works for you, you're still going to get that benefit," end quote. Physical activity has been shown to reduce the risk of cardiovascular and other diseases. Federal physical activity guidelines recommend adults engage in at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity or 75 minutes of vigorous intensity physical activity each week, or a combination of both. There's little guidance, however, on how that activity should be spread throughout the week. In the study, researchers investigated whether so-called weekend warriors who get most of their physical activity over a 1 to 2 day period and are largely inactive the rest of the week would get the same health benefits as people who spread their 150 minutes of exercise throughout the week. Using data from the UK Biobank, a large database containing genetic and medical information on volunteers in the United Kingdom, researchers analyzed physical activity levels and disease prevalence for 89,573 people who were on average 62 years old. Physical activity was measured using wrist-based accelerometers that participants wore for 1 week. They also tracked the development of 678 diseases over a median 6.3 years of follow-up, including circulatory, digestive, skin, endocrine/metabolic, kidney, infectious, musculoskeletal, and neurological diseases, along with cancers, mental health disorders, and injuries. Among participants who met the recommended weekly amount of physical activity, those who exercised throughout the week achieved a median of 418 minutes. Weekend warriors, however, were substantially more active in a shorter period with a median of 288 minutes. Compared to people who did not meet the recommended amount of exercise per week, being a weekend warrior was associated with a reduced risk for 264 health conditions, and being active throughout the week was associated with a lower risk for 205 conditions. The strongest associations between physical activity and lower disease risk were found among cardiometabolic conditions, including a more than 20% lower risk for high blood pressure, more than 40% lower risk for diabetes and sleep apnea, and a roughly 50% lower risk for obesity. There were no significant differences in disease risk reduction between weekend warriors and week-long exercisers when they were compared directly. Dr. Leanna Ross, an assistant professor in medicine at Duke University School of Medicine in Durham, North Carolina, said the findings not only provide reassurance to people unable to exercise during the week, but also show just how beneficial physical activity can be to overall health. Quote, "Physical activity really can be like a wonder drug for our health and well-being," end quote, said Ross, who was not involved in the research. Quote, "This study extends our knowledge about how physical activity affects health to an even broader range of diseases and conditions, and shows that if your schedule and your lifestyle make it so you prefer to exercise 1 or 2 days a week, you're going to likely receive the same wide-ranging health benefits as you would if that activity were spread throughout the week," end quote, she said. Ross said one weakness in the study is that the UK Biobank participants are predominantly white, so it's unclear whether the findings can be applied to other racial and ethnic groups. Athletics. Anger over heat-related deaths of athletes. Baltimore. Heat-related illness continues to be a serious concern for student athletes throughout the United States. In August, at least 6 teenage football players died, all linked to either heat stroke or head injuries. One of those tragedies hit home in the greater Baltimore community as Franklin High School junior, 16-year-old lineman Leslie Noble IV, collapsed at practice on August 14th and died later that day. The Maryland Medical Examiner has not yet released a cause of death, but dispatchers that day referenced possible heat stroke. Hearing these stories, Howard County dentist Dr. George Garbus became increasingly frustrated. Quote, "I got angry," end quote, Garbus said. Quote, "I got angry because I see this local kid dies. Then all of a sudden I'm seeing this kid in Alabama. It's like, wait a minute, this shouldn't be happening," end quote. Garbus has previously worked on preventing these kinds of tragedies. In 2022, he and his partner, Varen Wilde, created the Thermopact Mouth Shield. The Thermopact Mouth Shield is a custom-fit, color-changing mouth guard meant to be an early detection device for heat-related health issues. When an athlete's oral temperature rises to roughly 102 degrees, the mouthpiece changes color, warning coaches or trainers to take the athlete off the field and further examine them. It is also designed to absorb more force than a standard mouthpiece. Quote, "Every single one of those deaths that occurred, every single one of those deaths could have been prevented," end quote, Garbus said. Quote, "There's no question in my mind that they all could have been prevented," end quote. Garbus, Wilde, and the product's 7-person sales team have worked to increase its awareness throughout the United States. They are partnered with the Jordan McNair Foundation and are the official mouthpiece of the Big 33 Football Classic, an all-star event featuring the top high school football players in Pennsylvania and Maryland, and the Hula Bowl, a college all-star game in Orlando, Florida. In January, Garbus led a presentation about the Thermopact Mouth Shield to all the team trainers and medical staff of the Canadian Football League. The Thermopact Mouth Shield is now being utilized by some college athletic programs, including Southern University, which purchased 150 of them, and McNeese State University in Louisiana. Dr. Jessica Robinson, Southern University's Director of Sports Medicine, wanted to sample the product and invited Garbus to campus in March to fit the entire football team ahead of spring practice. During the presentation, Garbus and Robinson emphasized to the players the importance of self-awareness and recognizing when their mouthpiece changed color. He also showed the athletic trainers how to custom fit the product. Quote, "After we started talking and getting into it, they said, you know what, there have been times when I feel like I was getting hot, but I didn't know, and I didn't want to come off. I don't like to wear a mouth guard because they're uncomfortable," end quote, Garbus said. Quote, "I got a lot of information out of them. Then, one by one, as they're coming up and getting fitted, we're asking them questions. How do they wear the mouthpiece? Why do they wear one? All of that information and all of that education, I think, sparked something in that program and said, you know what, we have to wear something. We might as well wear something that's going to help us be better and make sure that we get the best of our athletes, end quote. With practices in the intense Louisiana heat, Robinson saw the product's benefit. Throughout the spring, she saw several players take themselves off the field after their mouthpiece changed color. When a player's mouthpiece changes color, Robinson and the training staff give the whole group a break. They direct players to the, quote, cooling zone, end quote, under mist-blowing fans, hydrating with Powerade and water. After practice, all the players receive cold towels and head to the ice baths. Quote, if they're starting to get overheated, the mouth shield will turn into a white color and you'll see it in your mouth and say, okay, it's time to hydrate, end quote, Robinson said. Quote, it allows you to be more alert and aware of what's going on with your players. It's really beneficial because it also helps with concussions. It prevents their jaw from shifting, end quote. Since its release, the thermopacked mouth shield has undergone multiple changes. From January to March 2023, the thermopacked mouth shield partnered for a study with the University of Connecticut's Corey Stringer Institute, named for the former Minnesota Vikings lineman who died in 2001 from heat stroke complications. Their study of 12 participants, 6 men and 6 women, found that the thermopacked mouth shield can aid in recognizing if an athlete's oral temperature is above 102.2 degrees Fahrenheit. It also showed that the thermopacked mouth shield had a 100% sensitivity rate when body temperature is in a safe range. After the study's findings, they redesigned the product to add the thermopacked logo on the front as another visual indicator. As the mouth guard changes color, the logo becomes more pronounced. Because of supply issues with the foam part of the mouth guard, they substituted a new material, partnering with D3O. The new material absorbs more force compared with the old one, according to ballistics testing from the Canadian company Biokinetics. Biokinetics found that the initial mouth guard absorbed 20% to 50% more force than the other tested name brand mouth guards, while the updated version absorbs about 20 to 60% more force than the original. Every thermopacked mouth shield now comes with a guard guide, which allows an athlete to mold the mouth guard better and create more of a custom fit. Garbus is hopeful the product will become more widely used as more people learn about its benefits.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, October 3rd, 2024. Poindexter. Donald Thomas Poindexter was a loving husband, father, and grandfather. He passed away peacefully on September 20th, 2024, in Alpine, Texas. Don leaves behind his wife of 61 years, Patricia Poindexter, his daughters Jill Wise, Franklin, and D. Lynn Poindexter Turk, Gregory, his grandchildren Danielle Slager, Hannah Olson, Ariel Zahir, and Lucas Turk, and great-granddaughter Adriana Slager. He was preceded in death by his mother and father, Ellis and Mary Poindexter, and brother Jack. Don, born May 10, 1936, grew up in Indianapolis, graduated from Shortridge High School, and received a Bachelor of Science in Psychology from Purdue University. After completing the ROTC program in high school and university, he entered the Army and became a captain. He served overseas for 2 years and in the Army Reserves for 5. Don and Pat met in Detroit, Michigan, and were married in 1963. Don was first employed by Liberty Mutual and then began his 30-year career with Texaco, spending the majority of it in Houston, Texas. After retirement, Don and Pat moved to Fort Davis, where they have become active members of their community. He had a passion for all things automotive, from rebuilding car engines to attending Indy 500 races. Don also enjoyed genealogy and was active in the Poindexter Descendants Association. At gatherings with friends and family, he was known for his bartending skills and amusing stories. Most importantly, Don was a devoted member of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Alpine, Texas. A memorial service honoring Donald's life will take place on Saturday, October 5th, 2024, at 2 p.m., with visitation starting at 1 p.m. at Redeemer Lutheran Church in Alpine. In lieu of flowers, contributions in memory of Donald Poindexter may be made to either Redeemer Lutheran Church or the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. Funeral services have been entrusted to Alpine Memorial Funeral Home in Alpine. Condolences may be left at www.alpinememorialfuneralhome.com.
This is the Dear Abby column. Teen keeps bedroom door shut when girlfriend pays a visit. Dear Abby, my 18-year-old stepdaughter has decided to date another female. She has dated boys in the past, but that's not the issue. We have nothing against the LGBTQ community. My husband's brother is gay. My issue is, should my stepdaughter spend time with her girlfriend in her bedroom with the door closed? If this were a boy, my husband would certainly have an issue with it. Fear of sexual activity leading to getting pregnant. We are both old school about that, but have embraced her new relationship. But we definitely don't want our house to be the hookup point. It makes us uncomfortable. How should we handle this? Signed, Open Door in Pennsylvania. Dear Open Door, handle this the same way you would if you were writing about the young woman having a boyfriend. Tell her you are uncomfortable with sexual activity going on in your home and prefer that if she entertains her girlfriend in the bedroom, she must leave the door open. Dear Abby, my husband and I recently moved to a smaller town from a big city to be closer to our new grandbaby. This town is populated with a large number of older single women, and since day one, they have been drawn in droves to my husband, who is a very good-looking older man. These women behave as if I am not even there. They move very close to us while we are shopping and flirt with him. I have had to physically insert myself between one of them and my husband on several occasions. Not only is this annoying while it's happening, but I'm having a hard time making friends. More than one female friend has developed an unhealthy crush on him, so I no longer trust other women. What do I do? Signed, Just the Wife in Vermont. Dear Wife, you are going to have to decide to what degree you trust your husband not to stray, and concentrate your efforts on making friends with other couples. It would also be nice if your husband could remind these women that he's married and that you're right there. Dear Abby, my wife went on vacation with her best friend. While they were there, they visited a nudist resort. She admitted she took off her bathing suit and went swimming. Her friend also did. I was fuming to think she would undress in front of strangers. I feel betrayed. It makes me sick to my stomach to think she did this to me. Am I wrong to be anxious and mad about the situation? Signed, Dressed in Maine. Dear Dressed, I would have to know more about the clothing optional resort your wife and her friend visited. The nudist lifestyle is not a swinging singles weekend. It is often enjoyed by entire families, and the atmosphere is healthy. Please get off the defensive and ask your wife to tell you more about her adventure, which may have been no more than innocent fun and had nothing to do with you. You do not own her body, just her heart if you are lucky. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Jean Phillips, and was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. You can contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.